Okay, so this is April 27th, 2019, and I just started the recording here. We are looking at the triennial parasha from Deuteronomy 15. We read starting in verse 7 and through Deuteronomy 16 through verse 17. And the Haftarah, or the Haftarot for this reading is Isaiah 29, verse 3, and the following verses, Amos 8, 4, and the following verses, and Isaiah 35, verse 3, and the following verses, which we'll get to here in a second. So is everybody following, got all the readings down? This is what we're doing. By the way, if you want to continue on with this, wherever you are in the world, they're on our website at narkis.org, and the readings as well as the recordings of these studies. So I'd like to first start off by just kind of summarizing what we read, because it was a lot of stuff, and just so that we're all on the same page. What Deuteronomy 15, just go there, verse 7. What is this section about here?
The three major feasts of the Lord.
Deuteronomy 15?
15.
Oh, feet, yeah, I'm sorry. You're going back.
Shnata Shemitah, which is what?
Setting your Israelite slave free every 7 years.
Okay. So, but does it start off like that?
Every 7 years, you should grow out underneath the debt.
If there's an Evyon
okay.
In one of your cities,
so
what you should do.
What is Evyon?
It's a poor strata of society.
Okay, so we're talking about poor here. It's a poor word for poor, but
so we're back.
Poor.
Sorry, I'm lost. We're going back to.
We're starting Deuteronomy 15, verse 7.
Oh, we're starting at the beginning of the chapter.
Right, I want to summarize what we just read.
Okay.
It's a pretty good place to start.
So, we're talking about poor to begin with. Then what? What did we read about? What about the poor exactly? What are you supposed to do for the poor? Open your hand, to give to the poor, right? Okay, so we get this idea of give to, as we keep reading in the verses, what else? Why are you giving?
Or in your heart.
Because of the seventh year.
Right, so don't have a hard heart, don't be ungenerous, but be generous. Okay, why is the seventh year? That's an important thing here. Seventh year, what happens in the seventh year?
You need to release the debt.
Okay, so you're going to release the poor, free the poor from their debt.
Free them from slavery.
Okay, so there's slavery involved here. It's not really what we think of as slavery today. It was more of an indentured servanthood where you would go and work off your debts and you would be freed one day. Whereas when we think of slavery today in the Western world, we think of, well, you know. Yeah, it's a terrible thing that is. Sorry?
It's for your whole life.
It's for your whole life, yes.
So the indentured servant pays off the debt.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Israelites could not be slaves. They could only be servants.
Well,
temporary slaves.
Yes.
Right.
That's correct.
But in other words, when a captured people can be slaves of Israel.
Yes.
But not
correct.
Of Israel.
That's
but
right.
Jacob to Laban really was an indentured servant. Right.
Aren't we all to our father-in-laws? But let's keep going here. They're being freed. The Israelites who were indentured servants, they're being freed. And what's else in Deuteronomy 15 did we read about?
I just noticed on the same thing.
Yeah.
Was that you see somebody poor, and you basically want to give them something, but you're thinking the Shemitah year is coming up, so you don't have to bother, really.
Right. Everybody follows, right, what it said there in the text, what Jemma brought up, that
that's verse 59. Beware lest there be a wicked thought in your heart. heart, saying, hey, the seventh year of the lease is at hand, and your eye will be evil against your poor brother, and you give him nothing.
There's a whole economic system going on in ancient Israel, and we don't have a lot of evidence for it, okay? We read about it here, but we don't really see it happening, except one time in the book of Jeremiah, before the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians. The last king of Judah, Zedekiah, calls this year of release for the slaves. I think it's Jeremiah 34, 36, 37 in there. And that's the only evidence that we have where in the biblical text that this thing was happening. But there's a whole economic system that's based. It doesn't mean it didn't happen. I'm just trying to say, as far as to see how this plays out in real time, we don't have a lot to work with. And so you have a whole economic system of this 7 years of people having debts and paying them off. In a sense, we kind of have it in the modern world with, like, say you get a mortgage for a house, it's 30 years or whatever you
want. A lot more than seven.
Right. Or cars, or people will take on loans from banks and they have to pay it off. But you can't go into prison nowadays for your debts, even though you could at least, 200 years ago or something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
And you probably could in other countries, I don't know.
Debt in England had
but not in the West.
Debtors' prisons.
So you would have this whole system of 7 years, you would work, you would be indentured for 6 years, and then your debts are freed in the seventh year. Release of debts. This is the Shemitah, Deuteronomy 15, and you've got this going on, but then in Leviticus 25, you have the big one going on, the Jubilee, right? And this is talking about how often is the Jubilee year? 50th. So it's seven...
Seven sevens.
Seven times plus one.
Yeah, 7 years times seven equals 49 years. And then the Jubilee is the 50th year.
So the 49th year is the worst.
Right.
Because you'd have a Shemitah followed by Yovel.
So technically you'd have 2 years.
2 years of no slave labor.
Kind of like yesterday, right? We had two straight days of Shabbat. Pesach ended, and so Thursday night started the Shabbat, and then we're still on Shabbat. So nothing's open for two straight days here.
What's the letter you've written in Hebrew for Shemitah?
Tet.
Tet.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's this whole system going on. Everybody's probably written lots of research papers on how they think it happened and how it could have worked and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, but apparently, like what Jimmy just pointed out, the person's saying there are like loopholes, like in tax law, right? People look for loopholes how to save money to pay taxes, at least in America, and because they make it so complicated. And so also here, someone's looking for loopholes in this indentured servant thing going on, and they're thinking, oh, I don't have to pay this because now, I don't have to be generous to this person because...
I don't have to be generous to you for this year because next year...
You'll go free.
You'll go free, but everything was set up to be only 1 year long because we know when it goes anyway, and I thought it was a gift anyway.
Isn't it?
Yeah, which verse? Let's look at the verse.
It's in 9. Be careful lest you entertain the wicked thought.
Yes.
Well, isn't it to do with the fact that you're poor, and I'm thinking I've got to lend you some money, let's say. Why bother? Because after all, you've got to give it back to me next year, or you're going to be.
But that's not mine.
So what might help us here is go to Exodus 23. Exodus 23.
But also in verse 17, it says, "If you set them free, you must not send them away empty-handed."
Right.
Before, so it's not just the loan, you're actually required to give them something afterwards.
So, yes.
Exodus what?
23. Exodus
23. May I ask something?
Yes.
When you go back to verse 6 of the same chapter
Deuteronomy 15?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, that's verse 4, right?
Ah,
well, no, but verse 4 says there will be no poor in among you. In verse 4. Well, yeah, in verse 6 it says you will lend but not borrow. Right, but then as we continue our reading today, you go down to verse 11. It says there will always be poor among you. So you got this contradiction in the text here. Well, what does this mean?
Well, on a macro level, you could say maybe the country will never have to borrow, but the micro level, individuals could still be poor within the country.
Or you could say one is the ideal and one is the reality, right?
In terms of what Sharon's just said, she's right, because it's linked to the nations. For the Lord your God will bless you, just as he promised you. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over you.
But also poverty is linked to things like becoming a widow, losing a son.
So the individuals.
So those things would happen anyway.
That's
right.
And there's also there's the proviso in the middle of it all, only if you carefully obey the voice of the Lord your God.
And that's why I try to say the ideal, yes, we need to obey God. We don't, we shouldn't sin, but we still fall short, and
we need to have rules about how to take care of those people.
Right. We need to protect the ones in our society that need to be protected.
I think a sign of a healthy society, though, is an objective should be to change the trajectory of the poor around you.
Sure.
Like, if you want them to set them free, but to bless them on the way out is to sow into their future.
Exactly. Exactly. Give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. Teach him how to fish, he'll eat forever. So the idea of learning.
Not sinning about empty-handed.
Right. But let's go to Exodus 23, and we're going to read verse 10, which is talking about this Shnat HaShemitah of the year of release that we're reading about in Deuteronomy 15. It says, for 6 years you are to sow your fields and harvest the crops, but during the seventh year, let the land lie unplowed and unused, and then the poor among your people may get food from it, and the wild animals may eat what is left. Do the same with your vineyard and your olive grove. So there is a connection here with not just having poor with you continually, but that as the sixth year is coming round, and the seventh, this is when the poor are getting some sort of tithe or something of your leftovers. You think of also the story of Ruth, right, with Boaz. She's a widow, and it says in Deuteronomy, the widows and the orphans and the Levites can come along the edges of your fields and pick up stuff to glean. That's right, what's left over.
And he goes further.
Boaz.
He says, follow the harvesters everywhere, not just on the edges. Like, go in and tell the harvesters to pull out of their, drop stuff on purpose.
So he's truly generous.
Yeah, he's truly generous.
He's not being tight-fisted. So, back to Numbers 15, and the context here of the poor among Israel. I went back to Deuteronomy 15. I mean, do you want to say anything about Exodus 23 or anybody? Yeah. Sorry. Deuteronomy 15, we're talking about the poor, and we're talking about there's a seventh year here, a canceling of debts, but you're supposed to be generous. And then it comes down to verse 12, and it says, so it's time to let that person go. And what is Israel just pointed out here is when you do let them go, you're supposed to supply them. You don't just send them out empty-handed. And why do you do that? What's the text say? Well, there's two things. One, it talks about you being a slave. That's why you release people, because you are no longer a slave. You're not supposed to hold your people slaves.
Still took knowledge that God has blessed you.
Exactly. You bless.
Lord has redeemed you. The Lord is actually, what is this redemption but to bring you out?
So on the one hand, the slavery thing, that you've been redeemed, you've been freed from slavery. But on the other hand, as the Lord has blessed you, you're to bless other people.
Right.
That's what it says there in verse 14. Deuteronomy 15, 14. Okay, now, just real quick, because I want to finish the summary before I want to read these other texts from the prophets. Go to verse 19. What's that section about that we read? Deuteronomy 15, 19. The firstborn animals, right? So you think, okay, well, what's this doing here? It's interesting, but what's the rules here about these?
We're coming back to tithing.
Okay, so.
So it's the firstborn of whatever you produce has to be given to the Lord. So it's actually linked in, indirectly with debts and free, being free from debts. It's to do with what you call the economic system.
And kind of the tithe, too,
yeah,
system
tithe, yeah.
of helping, tithing to the poor, if you want to call it that, like leaving the stuff on the edges of your fields. There are the tight-fisted people who are like, okay, I got to do this because I got to do this. And then there's people like Boaz who are like, here, take some more. But what are you not supposed to bring as a defective animal? So what is a defective animal?
Lame.
Blind,
any
defect.
It says blind,
flesh.
Okay, let's go to chapter 16, Deuteronomy 16.
Just before you do, it struck me as reading the whole thing that time and again, or maybe it comes later, but it starts here in 19, this phrase which you've talked about before, Gary, that you're to bring this offering, this firstborn male or whatever it is, in the place which the Lord chooses, which is like the euphemism for Jerusalem.
Yes.
It repeats itself through this chapter more times than I've ever seen before.
Yes, yes, that's right. In chapter 16, right? Especially.
It goes on, yeah. But I saw it in 16, but then I just realized now that it starts at the end of 15.
Yes. And so we now come in 16. What did we just read? We read about three things. Chapter 16. What are the three?
The three things.
The three feasts.
Passover, Shavuot, and
Sukkot. Passover, Shavuot, Sukkot. Okay. And nicely, we just celebrated Passover.
In the month of Aviv.
In the month of Aviv. Shavuot and Sukkot. So, what are these three festivals have in common?
Agricultural connections.
Okay.
You have to go up to Jerusalem.
And you have to go up to Jerusalem.
Pilgrimage.
Okay, so you've got to go up to Jerusalem to celebrate these three.
Or
according
the place that
the
Lord will choose.
So I'm putting Jerusalem in quotes here. The place that the Lord will choose to put his name, which we all know is Jerusalem. We talked about this in the last weeks. What else is similar here in these three? I mean, obviously, there's sacrificial animals, right? Sacrifices.
There's a sense of, well, at least about Shavuot, there's a sense of time. How many days, when you keep Passover, how many days you keep Passover, and then in verse 9, we'll count 7 weeks.
Seven
and you've got to the 50th day and so on. You've got all these sevens. And
exactly.
Weeks. You don't have it in the
exactly.
Feast. The Feast of Tabernacles is 7 days, but it doesn't actually give you a month.
Sevens. Okay. The number is seven. So, Passover has seven. 7 days of what?
Matzot.
What is the nickname for matzot? Matzah, unleavened bread.
Lechem oni,
which is the bread of affliction, or the bread of poverty, or whatever. It's related to poor here. Okay, so 7 days of poor bread. Okay.
7 days of the bread of affliction.
Yeah. Now, what
the seven. So the seven times seven, it's like a jubilee. It's a seven.
Shavuot is the Feast of Weeks. Eight. How many weeks?
Seven.
Seven weeks.
Plus one. The same as jubilee.
So yeah, you definitely start to think over here in this direction. By the way, okay, and then Sukkot.
A week of Sukkot.
7 days.
Sukkot is 7 days.
Uh-huh.
When does the Shemitah start? The year of release. When does it start? It's Deuteronomy 31:10. Deuteronomy 31:10. The seventh year, the year of release. When does it start? Actually, I think it ends is what it says. But
at the end of 7 years.
Where?
At the Feast of Shelter. Temporary Shelter Sukkot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Deuteronomy 31:10 says, then Moses commanded them, at the end of every 7 years, in the year for canceling debts, which what we're talking about here, this year of Shemitah, the year of release, of canceling debts, during the Festival of Tabernacles, when all of Israel
comes to
appear before the Lord your God at the place he will choose. So there's a connection here with Sukkot and with
Shemitah.
And as we bring back this, as we finish the summary here, before we read the prophets, back in Deuteronomy 16, does anybody have any other insights into what we're reading here in Deuteronomy 16? Sorry if I'm flipping back and forth between a lot of things here. But we just celebrated Passover. In Passover, Pesach, you're supposed to bring the animal, right? No defect.
No defect in first fruits, firstborn and first fruits factors in some of them.
Yes.
And then also the reminder of Egypt. It all goes back to leaving Egypt.
You were slaves in Egypt.
That's both Passover and Sukkot.
Look at Deuteronomy 16:12. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. Remember that.
Gary, were you suggesting that each of these three pilgrimages are connected to one of these? You connected Sukkot with the Shemitah.
Yes.
How about Shavuot and Passover? Are they connected some way? Well,
it's Shemitah. We just read in Exodus 23, it said, at that year, you're just to let your fields be gleaned by the poor, right? Mm-hmm. And so you kind of think back to Shavuot, you think of Ruth. Right? She's gleaning. Passover, you're eating the bread of affliction, or Ani, which is connected to Ani, which is the poor. So you also have this idea of the poor, and when you go back into what we're reading here, we're talking about slaves, the poor. These are financially poor people who become slaves. So, in a sense,
indentured servants.
Well, it's also, again, if you're going to free people from their, quote, slavery, it's not just Egypt, it's also linked to the Shemitah, it's linked to the release.
Well, it's interesting in Deuteronomy 16 that even Shavuot, at the end of Shavuot, verse 12, remember that you were a slave in Egypt. So even the command to keep Shavuot is somehow linked to, you know, remembering Egypt, being a slave in Egypt.
Yes. And there's one big one I want to point out is if you look at, it says Shavuot and Sukkot in Deuteronomy 16. It says in both of these, you're supposed to rejoice, be happy. And what's it connected to? What's the rejoicing part connected to here in Deuteronomy 16?
Eating.
Eating. Right, but eating with who?
With eating with the Lord, meeting with each other.
Yeah,
with your family.
Yeah, but what's it say there? Who? You said the...
Oh, the poor people?
Yeah, who specifically are you supposed to rejoice with?
Sons and daughters, slaves and maids, Levites, outsiders, orphans, widows, within your community.
You and your son and your daughter.
So kind of like all of society, right? And but it includes
especially
the poor. And you know, we talked about this last time about Jesus when the parable of the supper, where you know, don't invite your friends, don't invite your close people, invite the poor, the lame, the people that are not on the inside. And so here you have in Deuteronomy 16, it says, rejoice with the Levites, the foreigners, the immigrants, the orphans, the widows. And finally, what's the very last verse that we read here this morning? What's it say?
One question,
hold on, just what's this last verse?
Don't come empty-handed.
Don't come empty-handed. Why?
It's in proportion to the way your heart is blessed too.
So it goes back to that same theology, or whatever you want to call it. You are to bless others like the Lord's blessed you. Okay, yes. What was your comment?
The Levites, that is specifically mentioned because you have to support them anyhow? Or?
Because they're poor. The Levites are poor. Because
they're dependent on other people's donations.
They don't have land.
They don't have inheritance. They don't have...
So if you don't tithe, they don't eat.
They live in some cities, but they don't have land. There's certain things that... They are basically in the same category as orphans and widows and the
even
foreigners.
Though they're special and chosen, very interesting in the ranking. You know, they're like more special, but actually.
And if you think about, I think it's Isaiah 57, it says, where does the Lord dwell? Isaiah 57, I think it's, he dwells with the poor and the broken and of spirit. And that ties into like the Beatitudes, and Jesus says, blessed are the
brokenhearted and crushed in spirit.
Yeah. But specifically with that word, with kind of like the lower people. So if you are chosen like a Levite, it would make sense that you would also be more dependent and lower in that same category.
Opposite to the world standards.
Opposite to the world standards. Okay, so this is our summary. Now, let's go to Isaiah 29 and see. So for those who haven't been here every week, what we try to do is we're looking at these are ancient readings that they're not tied into the modern parashah, which came from Babylon, which is the one that's read every week in the synagogue. These are readings that they found inside of this land in the Cairo Geniza that were more entrenched in this land in the time of Jesus. And so they were prior to the Babylonian parashah cycle that we now know as the parashah. So we're just kind of experimenting and looking around and seeing what were they connecting scripture-wise in their readings. And so, for example, some of the readings they have in this triennial parashah are like Isaiah 53, things that have been kind of wiped out of modern rabbinic readings.
They do still have modern...
No, they have it, but they've kind of eliminated things that have been associated with Jesus over the last 2,000 years for many reasons. So, and this morning, I'm very excited, actually, because it was just like, whoa. Because sometimes we don't really see things that kind of make your socks pop, but this morning is pretty interesting.
That's the amount of socks pop.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing socks this morning.
What's the Dr. Seuss book? Pop on
Socks.
Yeah, fox and socks. Isaiah 29.
Isaiah 29.
Okay, I'm going to read. Wait, did I get it right? Maybe it's not 29. Hold on, sorry.
If it's not 29, I'm
going to... Oh, sorry, it's 19, verse 19.
Oh, what
I'm wrong.
Just wait, chapter 29, verse 19?
Yes.
You probably got confused by the other Isaiah.
I brought them together. Okay, Isaiah 29, verse 19. And I'm actually going to start on verse 18 because somehow I think it has to include 18. In that day, the deaf will hear the words of the scroll, and out of gloom and darkness, the eyes of the blind will see. Once more, the humble and... This translation has humble But you have downtrodden. What other translations?
Meek.
It's
Anavim.
It's Anavim.
Where are you? I'm in
Isaiah 29:18.
Oh, I thought you went to 19.
I did, but then I kept talking faster.
29.
So
go back a verse from 19. So Isaiah 29:18.
Everybody there? Right, so Anavim. Okay, the downtrodden will again rejoice in the Lord. The poor among humankind will take delight in the Holy One of Israel. And here the word poor is the same word we have in Deuteronomy 15, where it talks about the poor, the poor, the poor. That's the same word. Evion. Verse 20, for tyrants will disappear, those who taunt will vanish, and all those who love to do wrong will be eliminated. Those who bear false testimony against a person who entrap the one who arbitrates at the city gate and deprive the innocent of justice by making false charges. So, can someone kind of encapsulate what we just read here? What's that, all of these verses basically trying to say? Justice. Who does not get justice in this world?
The poor.
The poor. Why?
They don't have money.
They don't have money.
There's no power. If you don't have money, you don't have power to.
Everyone knows that justice is, it's complicated. It's not black and white. There's some, you know, we live in an idealist world, but most of the world does not have certain standards to protect the rights of people, especially average, powerless people. And so this is a powerful concept, right? Of that one day the people that are in power will not be in power, and that the poor, the meek, the humble, the people who are lowly will have ultimate justice. And I want to frame it with that verse 18. It's not in our reading, but the deaf will be able to hear the words read from a scroll, and the eyes of the blind will be able to see through deep darkness.
But there's also a link back to the Deuteronomy thing in the whole idea of coming out of Egypt. The terrible one is brought to nothing. The scornful one is consumed. It's like an echo of Passover. Is that
sure.
possible?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's more there probably, but I want to keep going to Amos, because we have three readings here, and there's a lot here to consider. Amos is, if you haven't read him much, he's a radical prophet. I believe he's the prophet that Martin Luther King Jr. quoted from the most. Let justice roll like a river. At Washington, D.C. in, was it 1963? Four. And what's interesting is Martin Luther King Jr. studied under Pritchard, who was this world-renowned ancient Near East scholar at his school in America. So ancient Near East scholars, you're studying Egyptian, you're studying Babylonian, you're studying cuneiform, Akkadian, all of these. Sorry?
Bible.
And so he took classes with Pritchard, and so Martin Luther King loved the prophets, and specifically, I think Amos was one of them. And if you read Amos, you'll realize what he's really about is nothing average or ordinary. He probably would have been killed quite young just for saying what he was saying in his world.
Here, that D.C. verse is actually the one, what is the Lord required of your man, but that you do justice.
That's Micah.
That's one that was
but you're right. There's a lot of similarities with the minor prophets where.
But the nice time, Amos is from the south, and he goes to the north. And at the time, the northern kingdom was the powerful one. They're the rich people.
But so then he came back and he chastises old people. He went north and then south. That's probably right.
He gave a prophecy for everyone, including Israel and Judah. Right?
We were in Sudan once, and the southerners are the oppressed. The north was ruling them, domination. Yeah. And so many remarked to the southerners that the prophet was commanded to go to the north, to the rich, but then he came back and he really scolded the southerners too.
Yeah. Everybody gets a little something.
So here it is, Amos 8:4. Listen to this, you who trample the
needy,
the poor. The needy, or the poor. Evion, it's that word, poor. Listen, you who are trampling the poor, in the, doing away with the what?
Anve
arets. The poor of the poor of the land, or the meek, or the humble. So you've got both these words here of you've got the poor and you've got the poor. They're both in the same category. They're related, okay? Listen what Amos continues to say. You say, when will the new moon festival be over so we can sell grain? When will the Shabbat end so we can open up the grain bins? Just like today, it's Shabbat, most of your businesses aren't open, and people are waiting until tonight, and all the places are going to open up around 8 p.m., or maybe it'll be more like 8:30, and people are going to do business tonight. So here's the person talking about it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but then what do they say? We're eager to sell less for a higher price and to cheat the buyer with rigged scales. So these are people who are doing bad business. Verse 6.
And it's like, if you want to go out tonight and buy, you're going to pay twice as much for a loaf of bread that somebody cooked at 8 o'clock because you're so desperate.
Yeah, it's capitalism. So,
I don't know if it's capitalism.
Verse 6, we're eager to trade silver for the poor, a pair of sandals for the needy. We want to mix some chaff with the grain.
I've got that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, even sell the bad wheat.
Yeah.
Is that, but you've got...
Well, no, it's all it's the same. Yeah. So what does this remind us of from our readings this morning? From Deuteronomy.
Diddling the poor.
What? Why did this person become enslaved or indentured? Because of his debts, right? So in a similar sense, you've got this going on in Amos. There are people who have debts, and now they're being taken advantage of, or, you know, the smart, wily businessman is taking advantage of these people. And in some sense, I guess they're being enslaved or indentured here, however you want to put it.
It's also the opposite of first fruits. If you're mixing in some of the bad stuff with the good stuff to bulk it up, you're not, you know, that's a defect. You're not offering your best in the first. You're offering, you know, you're just trying to get the most out of the worst, actually.
And I don't want to read all of Amos 8, but just read the next two verses. The Lord confirms this oath by the arrogance of Jacob. I swear I will never forget all you have done. You know, what?
What's the arrogance of Jacob?
Well, I mean, what they've been doing, taking advantage of the poor. Oh, yeah, Jacob is Israel.
But it's interesting, Jacob is his pre-redemption name, if you like. So when Jacob is the guy who cheats and does his, you know, really can be quite nasty. And then also he's not going to forget.
So, anyway, those are harsh words. I just want to leave you with that. Let's go to Isaiah 35. You can dwell on that for a little bit. Isaiah 35 And I want to start in verse 1 of Isaiah 35 as we kind of bring it all together now. And this is where I got really excited. Isaiah 35, I'm going to start in verse 1. Let the desert and the dry region be happy. Okay, so the Midbar and the Arava. Let them rejoice, be happy. Let the wilderness rejoice and bloom like a lily. Let it richly bloom. Let it rejoice and shout with delight. It is given the grandeur of Lebanon, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the grandeur of the Lord, the splendor of our God. Okay, so just want to get this kind of context that there's rejoicing going on. There's a beauty that's kind of bursting forth, that's blossoming in a place unexpected, right? Isaiah 35, verse 3. Strengthen the hands that have gone limp. Steady the knees that shake. This verse is quoted in Hebrews chapter 12. Right here, this exact verse about strengthening the hands that are limp and steadying the knees that shake. When it talks about, you know, put your eyes on the forerunner of our faith and go after him. So strengthen those hands, steady those knees. Tell those who panic, be strong, do not fear. Look, your God comes to avenge. What has Isaiah 29, Amos 8, and now what I just read in Isaiah 35, the Lord comes to avenge, what all three of those have in common?
Justice.
Okay, justice, or what's another word for justice that is kind of a bad word?
Vengeance.
Vengeance. Because in a sense, justice is vengeance. I mean, if you come down to it, it's repaying someone for what they've done. You've done something evil, now you're going to have a punishment for it. Your God comes to avenge. With divine retribution, he comes to deliver you. Okay.
But the punishment is linked as well to one's not caring for the poor, not giving, not rejoicing, whatever. I mean, it's a sort of contrast, isn't it, between, on the one hand, the whole place is blooming and it's wonderful, and the Sharon is full of lilies, or whatever
right.
The translation said.
Yeah.
And it's all to show you the glory of the Lord, and you're still being mean, and you're still not releasing those from debt, and you're still not keeping the Shemitah,
right, in this big picture, but in Isaiah 35, we haven't talked about poor or anything yet, right? Right? We're all kind of building up to this. Why? Why is God coming to avenge? Why is the flowers blooming? So hold that just 1 second,
okay.
And then we'll bring it together. He's coming to avenge with divine retribution. Verse 5. Then blind eyes will open. Deaf ears will hear. Then the lame will leap like a deer. The mute tongue will shout for joy. So here's the rejoicing. This is this theme that we found in Deuteronomy 16 about Shavuot and Sukkot, this rejoicing. Rejoice with the orphans and the widows. And so here we have the mute, the person who cannot talk, rejoicing. For water will flow in the desert, streams in the wilderness. And we continue on with this whole kind of majestic highway that springs open in the wilderness that, you know, we've heard lots and lots about. But it's a way where it says the unclean will not travel on it.
It's a way of holiness.
It's a way of holiness. Okay, according to the biblical standards, especially like you read in Leviticus, what's unclean or what's not cannot come into the Lord's temple or
anything with blemish.
So you're rejoicing with the poor, but now the poor have been healed. I mean,
right. And specifically like with these sacrifices, right? The blind, the lame. So now the blind see, the lame walk.
Okay, so they're rejoicing. This is real rejoicing.
Right. In a sense, they've been freed. they've been redeemed.
Or they, or I mean, they're not only free; they've been healed. The lame will leap like
yes.
a deer. The tongue of the dumb will sing.
Yes.
So and waters freedom. Will come out of the wilderness. I mean, it's on every level this sort of incredible healing.
Yes.
So the freedom will be expressed physically, like physical healing.
Yeah.
The freedom they have.
Yes. So, obviously, anybody who's been reading the New Testament, and especially Jesus, we immediately think about the whole life and ministry of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
He was a healer. He specifically...
Go tell John what you see and hear.
John's in prison. He's about to have his head cut off. Are you the Messiah? Are you the coming one, Jesus? And Jesus says, the blind see, the lame walk, the deaf hear, the dead are raised to life, the lepers are cleansed. And what's the last thing he says out of all of those? There's six things.
The poor hear the gospel.
Have the good news preached to them or hear the gospel.
Right.
Where is that coming from in the Bible? Preach the good news to the poor. It's Isaiah 61. So go to Isaiah 61. This was my MA thesis many years ago.
I just suddenly dawned on me. Isn't it extraordinary? Paul said, John the Baptist says, are you the one who should come? And if people say to you now, is Jesus the Messiah? Is Jesus the Son of God? We argue it with all sorts of stuff. You have to understand the Trinity, you have to understand the nature of God, and so on. Instead of saying, just look and see what he did.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
And this is what Jesus proclaimed. He read this, Isaiah 61, in Nazareth,
right.
at the beginning of his ministry.
Right.
He said, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me. So here's the whole Messiah, right? Messiah means anointed one. The Lord's anointed me. What's he anointed him with? Did he put a crown on his head? Did he stick a sword in his hand? To proclaim good news to the poor. So here's our whole section this morning. The focus is on the poor. But the poor is not just a financial thing, as we'll talk about. He sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, to release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God.
Did he stop? Yeah.
Yes, Jesus stopped with the vengeance part. He didn't read that part. But I wanted to read it so that you remember in all three of these, there's a vengeance or there's a justice for the poor. And it's part of this whole grand plan involving Jesus. Because Jesus is, his ministry is not done yet. He still has to come back and judge. There's still a day of vengeance. And so, anyways, this got me really interested because this is going to be a little complicated, but if you were to go to Luke 4, verse 18, and you're to read what Jesus read in the synagogue there, you'll notice it's a little different than what we just read here. There's two main differences.
Luke 4,
verse 18 and 19. First off, it says, he's called me to proclaim, he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor, proclaim freedom for the captives.
He assigned me to proclaim release to the captives and the regaining of sight to the blind.
Regaining the sight to the blind. And that's not in Isaiah 61 in the Hebrew. It is in the Septuagint, in the Greek translation of it, but it's what's interesting is it has this connection of the blind seeing. And the blind seeing is, as we read this morning, is a part of Isaiah 35, and also is that verse 18 here of Isaiah 29. We have the blind seeing as well. And so That's the one thing. And the other thing that comes out in Jesus' reading, he does this thing, it's called the Gezerah Shavah, where he weaves together two texts in his Nazareth reading. He takes Isaiah 61, and then he weaves in there Isaiah 58, verse 6, I think it is. And he weaves them together because of one word. And the word is release. It's what we're talking about this morning with the Shemitah, the releasing the captives. And so this word is basically talking about slaves being freed, or people who are indentured, their debts. They're owed to you, and you release them.
Is that like Leshach, right?
Here it's Shalach.
Yeah, Shalach. But, yeah. And so, when you're reading Isaiah 61, here's one other thing I have to add in here. I'm sorry I'm like piling this on like a smorgasbord, but the Isaiah 61 is talking about the Jubilee. And we know this because it says, the Lord's anointed me to proclaim freedom. And proclaim freedom only appears like that in Leviticus 25:10, when it's talking about the Jubilee. Proclaim freedom or liberty. It's on the Liberty Bell of America. Paul Revere, Philadelphia. I think it's there now. And you can see it out here at the park, the Liberty Bell Park. Leviticus 25:10, proclaim freedom to the captives. Again, we're talking about these people who are financially indebted. Their freedom. And so Isaiah 61... one is quoting from Leviticus 25:10. And so this whole thing that Jesus is talking about when he goes to Nazareth, he's talking about a jubilee of freedom. Okay, but we're not talking about here like socialism or communism where, you know, go out there and financially just, you know, what?
Bankrolled.
Yeah, bankrolled. He's talking about the spiritual release. And we know this because if you go through and you read through the rest of Acts, Luke, Matthew, and Mark, he keeps talking about forgiveness of sins. And that word for forgiving sins, aphesis, is the word that we get for releasing the prisoners from the financial debts. But in the New Testament, it's talking about sins. So what I'm trying to say...
The debt was a metaphor for sin.
The debt becomes a metaphor for sin. It morphs. The language is changing. Just like today, there are things that we say today that have morphed as the language has gone on over time. And so in the day of Jesus, he's taking this idea of these financial debts and saying, look, there's a spiritual debt that is hanging over you and you need to be freed from it. And he's here to proclaim that. And so the poor, it is people who are poor. I'm not trying to say it. Disconnect that at all, because you read lots of Jesus' parables. He's talking about people who are physically and financially poor, but he's saying the greater need is much deeper, right?
It's, in a way, he's dealing with the root causes as opposed to just the symptoms.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're poor, and yeah, you know, you're off, but you want to really get your life turned around. It's about this much deeper.
Exactly. And that's the point. That's my point this morning.
That's the whole point. That's
really too bad they didn't hear it here. Basically, Danny was saying that Jesus is trying to have people deal with the root cause of life, which are these debts that are within the heart that are spiritual.
You see it all the time. I mean, sometimes praying for people, they've got some terrible problem, and yet the root cause is very often that rage with their parents, their anger, their unforgiveness. And that creates a whole string of symptoms. They may be physical symptoms, pains here and there, but the root is something different. And we're very slow very often to say to the Lord, show us what the root is.
And I want to end with one more thing, and it's very simple. It's 2 Corinthians 9, 6, and 7. 2 Corinthians 9, 6, and 7. This is Paul, and Paul is very much aware of what's going on in our readings as well. And this is what he says. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And if you remember back in all of our readings in Deuteronomy 15 and 16, about when you release someone and you free them, don't be stingy. You be generous to them, because as you are generous to them, God is generous to you. There's this system that's going on. And it's the same thing in Jesus' teaching. He says, you know, forgive others as I've forgiven you, right? The parable of the unforgiving servant. If you cannot forgive, watch out. If you can't forgive people around you, how can you expect God to forgive you? It's very much woven into that. And so...
even the Lord's Prayer is intrinsic.
Yeah.
Forgive us our sins as we forgive other people.
Yeah. And in the Lord's Prayer, that forgiveness is also, it goes back to this. That word in the Greek goes back to the Hebrew, which is as you forgive, as you release those debts that people owe you financially, so you're also releasing what people have done to you spiritually that you've held grudges onto. You have to release, and you have to be generous. And so I think it's awesome here that Paul is... he's very obviously referencing Deuteronomy 15 and 16 here. That essentially, if I were to sum up this morning, this is about giving. It's about rejoicing, and it's about blessing. And it's this spiritual ecosystem that we're woven into in God's plan. That as God gives us, as he's blessing us, so too we give and we bless others. And we should do it with happiness, with joy, and not, you know, not with a bad attitude. So, Shabbat Shalom.